Now we're holding on page Samach in Nedarim Oischof. We learned last time that Moshe became rich from the Psoilus Shaluchos, so now the Gemara expands on that point. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Mashu Shchinose, Hashem does not cause his Shchina to rest El Al only on somebody who has the following qualities: Gibur, he's strong, V'Oshir, and rich, V'Chacham, and wise, V'Onav, and humble. The Kulam Mimosha, and all of them we can learn from Moshe. Now, there are explanations. That Amram gives an explanation that all of these are meant as ruchniistic qualities. Gibber would mean, as in Gibber, as in Ezu Gibber, Akovish Yitzray, and Osher would mean that he's wise in knowledge, that he's rich in knowledge of Torah and in Midas Tovis, but many of the other Mephoshim explain that it means in the simple sense, which fits better with the previous piece of Gemara as well, and what the Gemara is going to go on to point out, how we know he was an Osher, is from the chips of the Luchos, and they explain, the Ran gives an explanation, for example, in his Droshus, that the reason is because you want the Navi to be self-sufficient. He shouldn't have to be depending on other people, because then he may be afraid to speak up against them, because he realizes his parnosa depends on them, and they themselves may not respect him as much. When he's a giver and an usher and so forth, then they'll look up to him. There's Gemara and Shabbos that mentions a similar thing, but they are instead of honor, but mentions Baal Koima, that he's tall. So a similar idea. People literally look up to somebody who's tall, and therefore people will look up to him and accept what he has to say. So we call on me Moshe. All of them we learn from Moshe. Now the Rosh does point out over here that when we say Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashu Shenosei, that would be the kvius. As an ongoing thing, a Navi has to have these four qualities. You could have, for example, that a person does not have these qualities and still Hashem's Shechina will rest on him as an occasional thing. We find by Bilam, for example, he was certainly not an honor, just the opposite, and he had Nevuah a few times, and he have not necessarily did all, where all the other Nevi'im had all these four qualities, but we're talking about when they were Navi the kvius, then they have to have. Marshall points out in Bava Basra, you have the expression over there, the Gemara says, ever since the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, Nitla Nevuah me Nevi'im, Nitla L'Chachamim, and here we're saying a Chacham anyway has to be one of the qualities that a Navi has to have. So Marshall there mentions in a similar vein, therefore it means that to be the Kvius, he has to be a Chacham, but you can have, without that, it was possible for sometimes a person who is not such a Chacham to have Nevuah, but we're saying the Kvius, he has to have that. And then the Gemara is saying over there that altogether Nevuah was taken away from the Nevi'im and given exclusively to the Chachamim.
What about that it was given to the Shoitim?
So the Gemara also mentions that it was given to children and Shoitim, right? I mean, it means in a certain sense, it means not real Nevuah, but in other words, like a semblance of Nevuah. As the Gemara gives examples over there, where a child, the daughter of Rav Chista, and a Shoitah, who was in the marketplace of Mechuza, both said something that turned out unexpectedly to be true. When we get to Baba Basra, Bez Hashem, we'll learn more about it. You even find, by the way, you even find an example in Sefer Melachim where a false Navi momentarily gets a true Nevuah from Hashem in the story of Yeravam and Idai and over there. Okay, so for Kulam Mimosha, all of them, we learn from Moshe that this is how it has to be. And the point is, since the Pasuk says, about Hashem says, in Parashat Shoftim, Moshe tells the Jewish people, you don't need magicians and other things like that, like the Goyim do, because you have Nevi'im. So, and Moshe says the expression, Navi mekir b'cha me'achecha kamoini, yokim l'ashecha Hashem alakecha, Hashem will set up for you Nevi'im that are like me. So therefore it means, as much as possible, they have to be like Moshe. Gibber, where do we see that Moshe was strong? Yichtiv by Yifres as a oil on a Mishkan. The pasuk says that Moshe spread out the curtains, the Urias, and they're made out of cloth, and the Urias Ism and all that over the Mishkan. V'omer Rav, Moshe Rabbeinu Posa. It means that Moshe himself spread out those Urias, those curtains over the Mishkan. Yichtiv Esther Amos Erech Hakodesh Shogemer. Now it says that each of the Kroshim was 10 Amos tall. Now since it doesn't mention anything about ladders, anything that you had that was needed for the Mishkan is mentioned somewhere. For example, it mentions that they needed stakes to the Cholay Yisedir, as you have at the end of Parashas Truma. So therefore, so they needed stakes. So obviously, they needed something to pound them into the ground. But never mentions anywhere in all the accessories of the Mishkan ladders. So therefore, the implication is that no ladders were needed. Moshe himself is able to reach up and put up the Urias. So you see that he was 10 amos tall, and therefore we would assume that the Ran says if he was that tall, he must have been proportionately strong. But the Gemara says maybe not. The Emer de Arich v'Katin. Maybe it means he was tall and skinny, or tall and weak. sometimes, in fact, you have. Sometimes there are people who are particularly tall, but they're very thin for their height, and therefore the fact that they're tall doesn't necessarily mean they're that strong. Elamin Hadin Kra, rather we can learn it from the following pasuk, Dichtiv, Va'espris V'shnei Luchos. Moshe describes how he broke the Luchos. He says, I grabbed a hold of the Luchos, which I grabbed a hold, we learned previously, that it meant that, so to speak, Hashem was holding on to two tefachim of the Luchos and Moshe onto another two tefachim, and then he, so to speak, grabbed it away from Hashem. V'ashlichem me'al shtei yodai, I threw them down from my two hands. V'ashabrem le'enechem, and I broke them in your sight. So now Maharsha points out like this. The reason why we need this pasuk from Parshas Ekev, or it already describes the breaking of the luchos in Kisisa. It says by Shabaros and Tachas Ahar, because if it meant that, it wouldn't mean that he threw them down and it broke. You could think that it means he dropped them, they fell still intact, and then he took a hammer or something and started shattering them. But when we see from the pasuk over here, va'ashlichim me'al shtei yodei va'ashabrem le'enechem, means he threw them down forcefully and they broke. So in fact, Tosfos in this connection points out that that's the implication is when he says va'ashlichim me'al shtei yodei, means like he lifted them up high and then threw them down forcefully. That shows that he had great koyach, considering that they were made out of sun, as we learned before. They were made out of sapphire, which is a very heavy type of stone. V'tanya, and we learned in a braisa haluchas okan shisha v'rochvan shisha. Each of the luchas was 6 by 6 tefachim. V'ovyan shisha or shloisha, the thickness of each luach was 6 or 3 tefachim, according to different gear size. So they were quite heavy. It says that the luchas weighed 40 saw, which is, a saw is really a measure of volume, not of weight. But in terms of, if you had that volume of water, it would be the size of a mikveh, would be approximately 100 gallons, give or take. So you're talking like 700-800 pounds. So how heavy that would be, that volume of sapphire would be even heavier. And yet Moshe is able to carry it. So the fact that he's able to carry it up to that point, the Rif points out, that doesn't necessarily show Moshe's tremendous strength, since they had the letters of the Aseret HaDibros on them, so therefore they were light b'derech nes. But the point is that we see that even after the letters flew off, that he had the ability to lift them up and then throw them down forcefully. And Maharsha also adds the point that up until now he had been holding them in one hand. Now he held onto them with two hands in order to throw them down as forcefully as possible, and therefore we see how tremendously strong he was. Maharsha, by the way, points out as far as setting up the Mishkan, the reason why the Gemara didn't say you can show that he was strong for the fact that he was able to set up the Kroshim. The Kroshim themselves were quite heavy. There's a footnote in one of the volumes of the English Man Lawyers of the Torah anthology where Avraham Kaplan makes a calculation over there based on the size, based on the length, the width, and the thickness of the Kroshim. It comes out each one of them would have, depending on the size of an Amma, each one of them would have weighed a minimum of 1,500 pounds, and then more if you say that, and more if you have a larger size of an Amma, and that's just the wood, plus they were plated with gold. I've seen a different calculation that says that each of them weighed around three or four tons or so. So you could say that he was strong based on that. However, Maharsha says, the fact is, we know Hufkama Mishkan. It says, in fact, that Taka was too much for Moshe to do, and therefore the Eberster tells him, Rashi brings it in Parshas Pekudei, you make as though you're setting them up, and they'll stand themselves up on their own. So that doesn't show that Moshe was strong. Therefore, instead, we need the proof from the Luchos. Osher, where do we see that Moshe was rich? As we said before, Psalacha, Hashem told him, carve out the luchas for yourself, and we said that meant Psalton Shalacha Yehei, the leftovers of them will be for you. So now he has a bunch of sapphires, so he became rich from that. That's as Maharsha mentions in his Pirush and Baba Basra that he refers to over here. So how does that, we said before, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not Mashrish Chinosei only on an Osher. So until now, that takes care of from then on, from the second Luchas onward. What about until then? And again, the answer is based on what the Rosh says over here, B'kvius. It could be an occasional thing that Hashem is Mashrish Chinosei on somebody even if he's not yet an Osher. The Maharal gives a different explanation, something along the lines of that since that the Ashiros we're referring to over here, the Psoltim Shaluchos refers to, even though on the surface it does mean a Gashmi sticker, Ashiros it also means basically that he has the capability of being an Osher and of knowing how to use the Osher properly, and Moshe has that capability. He's ready for that even before it actually came into being by him having that sapphire. Chacham, where do we see specifically that Moshe was a Chacham? Obviously, it was the greatest Chacham in Torah, but Maharsha points out that actually when you think about it, Chacham over here also means that he has to be as knowledgeable as possible in Milid Alma, in material things as well. So where do we see that? Rav Shmuel, the Amri Tarbayu, because we see that both Rav and Shmuel explain, Chamishim Shari Bina Nivru Ba'olam, there were 50 gates of understanding created in the world, V'cholam Nipnu L'Moshe Chutz Me'echad, and all of them were given to Moshe minus one. So he had 49 of them. The Gemara elsewhere explains the point that you have, Maharsha brings over here, since the Pasuk says, until a mezukok shivosoyim, that the Chochmah of Torah is refined sevenfold, so that means 7 times 7 is 49 times, so therefore, yeah, memtes share bina, they're accessible to the human mind, plus a 50th, which is only for the Eidish there. Maharsha points out in this connection, incidentally, the Gemara tells us in Eruvin about a Talmud of Reb Meir Sumchus who knew 48 reasons for each thing in Torah. So he was one less than Moshe, and Moshe in turn is one less than Eivishte. In Chassidus, we have the expression that's brought that when Moshe passed away, on how Nivoy is Nun Boy, that then he was able to achieve the 50th level. Anyway, so Moshe reached the highest possible understanding that there could be. As the Pasuk says, you made him a little less than Hashem, a little less in his knowledge than Hashem, and you crowned him with glory and with majesty. Maharsha points out that whole Kapitel Ches of Tilim, is all the Gemara in Shabbos explains that a number of psukim in it refer to the dialogue back and forth between the Malachim and the Eivishter and Moshe about the Torah being given to earth, where the Malachim are arguing, your glory, the Torah, should remain in Shemayim, and then at the end you have they say Hashem and they don't say any because Moshe bested them in the argument over there and proved that the Torah has to be given here on earth. So we see that whole capital is referring to Moshe Rabbeinu as an experience receiving the Torah, so therefore this Pasuk Vatechasreo Ma'atme Elikim is also referring to the high level that Moshe reached. So we see that they are the greatest Chochmah possible. And in fact, as far as what it means, these Nun Shari Bina, the Rambam Taka explains that it means there's 50 different levels of things in the world. You have in a general way, the world is divided into Domim, Semeach, Chai, and Medaber, and within each one of them you have different levels and sub-levels or whatever, so that altogether you can speak of 50 levels of knowledge, Poshet, of how the world works, and Moshe was able to achieve 49 of them. So therefore, so we see that he was a Chacham not only in all the aspects, in all the possible aspects of Torah, but also in Mili Dalma, as Maharsha says. Onov, where we see that Moshe was Onov Dichtiv, Vaish Moshe Onov Moed, we call it Adam Asher Alpnei HaAdama. As we see that Moshe was the humblest person that there ever was in the world, so therefore, so he had that Milo also. And we're saying that any other Navi, in order to have Nevuah B'Kvius, as the Rosh says, has to have these four qualities as well. Goyen Yaakov over here, actually on the side, points out, aside from the point that the Rosh had said, that it means B'Kvius or not, he brings also that on the face of it we do find Nevi'im who didn't have these four levels. Part of the question is, for example, we say that all the Jewish people had Nevuah at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf and at the time of Matan Torah. You're gonna, obviously not every one of them had all these four qualities. So he goes into a bit of an arichos over here, but the gist of his explanation is that another meaning of v'cholam mimosha, when we say in the Gemara over here, v'cholam mimosha, on the surface what it means is, all of them, we learn that a person has to have these milas, to have nevuah b'kvius, we learn that from Moshe. Since we see that Moshe had these qualities, then it means every other navi b'kvius does as well. But he points out another way we can learn v'cholam mimosha is all of them received from Moshe. How are all the Jewish people able to have Ashras Ashchina and able to have Nevuah at Kriyas Yamsuf and at Har Sinai is because they received at that time from Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, like you have such an outpouring of Alakos, such an outpouring of Nevuah on Moshe that it's able to spill over to everybody else, even the people who themselves would otherwise not be Roy for it. You find a somewhat similar thing when the 70 Skenim were chosen in Parshas Baal Oischa, where it says also that Hashem says, I'm gonna give you Valtzalti Min HaRuach, I'm gonna take some of the spirit that's on you and put it on them. And so in other words, the same idea, like because such a tremendous outpouring of the Shekhinah is coming on Moshe, then therefore the 70 Skenim, they were momentarily able to say Nevuah as well. You have other examples of that as well. You have an example in Sefer Shmuel about that, where at one point during the time when David is on the run from Shaul, at one point he goes and hides out in Shmuel's Beis Medrash. the Noyes Baroma, as the Pasuk calls it. So then the Pasuk describes, Shaul sent policemen to arrest David, and as soon as they come there, they get so taken up by the spirit of Nevuah that's floating around there, that they themselves start saying Nevuah. And this happens a couple of times, so finally Shaul himself goes to find out what's going on, and he also becomes a Navi temporarily. So when you have such a flow of Nevuah, then you have even people who otherwise would not usually be suitable for it are able to get it. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yechanan, Kol HaNeviim Kol HaMashirim Hoyu. All the Neviim were rich. We're saying that every Navi has to have these qualities, but we're saying in particular we can demonstrate that all the Neviim were rich. Menolon mi Moshe u mishmul u miomis u miyona. We can see examples of that by four of the Neviim. So let's start with Moshe. Dichtiv, Moshe says, and in the whole story of Korach, he says, don't pay any attention to their mincha. They're thinking that I'm abusing my position over the Jewish people. You should know, he says to Hashem, Lo chamur echad mehem nesasi. I did not take even a single donkey from them. Now, the question is, what is Moshe trying to tell us by that? You're telling me that he's saying to Hashem, I never took a donkey from them for free without paying for it. What does that mean? My Pokemon the Shokaboy Agra? What does Moshe have to tell us that he wouldn't do that, that he wouldn't be a Gazlan? What's the Chiddush in that? Now, to be sure, Rashi does mention on the Pasuk, he would have had a valid reason to, because, for example, when you have in Parshas Shmos, when he's taking his family to Mitzrayim, he's going to Mitzrayim from Midian, and he's taking his family on a donkey, so Rashi mentions I could have charged them for that, because after all, I'm bringing that in order to take them out of Mitzrayim, and nevertheless, I didn't. But here, the Gemara is taking in a different sense. Ela filu ba'agra. Evidently, what Moshe means is that he's not taking it from them even to rent it for pay, because he doesn't want to have hanah from them. So he doesn't want to have hanah from them. That's how the Ran explains. Tosfos learns differently and says that what it means is that's the point. In other words, he was rich. He didn't need to rent a donkey from any of them because he had his own. And the Rosh makes a different point as well, that it means that he didn't want to have hanah from them because he was an onav. We just said before, Moshe was the ultimate onav, and therefore he didn't want to take advantage of anybody. So the Gemara asks, how does that prove that he was rich? Maybe it's Sakert, maybe he was poor. So therefore he couldn't afford to rent a donkey. Or he didn't have anything that needed to be transported on a donkey. And Marshall also explains the question is like this. What is Moshe saying? Why is he bringing up this point about the donkey? He's saying to Hashem, look at this. The people are saying that the people are saying, well, Moshe is so independently wealthy, that's why he's lording it over us. He's starter alenu, gami starter, because he's so rich that he figures he can do whatever he wants and we can't do anything back to him. Well, faket, maybe he's saying that, maybe you could say the other way around. Maybe Moshe is saying to Hashem, you know what, the problem is I'm so poor that they don't want to pay any attention to me, and they're saying, well, why should this guy be our ruler and our leader when look, he's so poor. So you can't prove from that one way or the other, because this loy chamur echam mehem nasasi could be taken either way. It could mean that he was rich and he didn't need them, but it could also mean that he didn't rent from them because he didn't need to, because he had animals of his own. It could also mean fakir because he was poor. It could also mean because he's an onav and he doesn't want to bother them. So it's no proof. Elam, psal lacha, psal tam shalacha, yehey. So we go back to the point about psal lacha, that he had the chips of the luchas, and he became rich from that. So therefore, we see from that alone that Moshe was rich. Okay, Mishmuel. Where do we see by Shmuel that he was rich? So Dichtiv, he also makes a similar point to Hashem in front of Hashem and in front of the Jewish people at the gathering in Gilgal. This is a very appropriately that Torah, Parshas Korach, because you have the same kind of declaration that Moshe says, Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. Then Shmuel makes a similar declaration. By the way, worth mentioning in this connection, the Gemara mentions in Megillah, this is one of the things that the Chachamim had to change for Talmai HaMelech when they translated the Torah into Greek for the first time. So they couldn't write Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi, because he, with his goyish cup, is going to say, okay, so Moshe didn't take any donkeys from them. Maybe he took other things from them. So they had to change the word chamor to chemed. I didn't take any desirable thing from them, to make it clear that Moshe didn't take anything from them at all that he wasn't supposed to. Okay, so Mishmuel. So Shmuel, you have the story in Sefer Shmuel. Shaul had been crowned as king, but not everybody accepted him as king. Then they had a battle against Melech, against Nachash Melech Bnei Ammon, and then everybody is willing to accept Shaul as king. So Shmuel says, "Come, let's start all over again. Let's go to Gilgal, and we'll renew the kingship, and we'll restart Shaul's kingship the way it's supposed to be." So now, at this point, it's a watershed moment in Jewish history. Shmuel is giving over the reins of authority from himself to Shaul, so therefore he gives the Jewish people a speech telling them, you should realize how we came to this point and what you need to be doing from now on. So he says, Hinini Anubi, here I am, speak up against me, Neged Hashem v'neged Mashichai, in front of Hashem and in front of his anointed one, Shaul, Asher Milakachti, is there anybody's ox that I took? The chamor milakachti. Is there anybody's donkey that I took? The gomer. So we see again. The point is that Shmuel was rich and he didn't. So again, the question is ibachinam. So if he means I never took anything for free, what's the chiddush? La poki man de shokabul agra. Does Shmuel need to announce in public that he's not a ganev and he never stole anybody from? He never robbed anybody that he's not supposed to. Elagafi lo bischar. So it must mean that Shmuel is saying that I never even bothered anybody to rent me a donkey for pay. Again, though, the problem is you have the same problem with that. How is that a proof that he's rich? The Dilma Shum de Oni Haba. Maybe, again, it means because he's poor. So, again, maybe, therefore, he didn't have anything to carry on a donkey, or he couldn't afford to rent a donkey. Now, by the way, Maharsha points out that when the Gemara is asking, when it comes to Shmuel, is it a chiddush that he didn't rob anybody? But Shmuel also continues with other points. He continues in the positive, Asmi Ashakti, Asmi Ratzoisi, did I ever do Oshek, withholding wages to anybody? So you could ask the same thing. Is it a chiddush that he wasn't over on a clear mitzvah in the Torah, like Sasha Kesreyacha? So Maharsha says that's different. The fact is, Shmuel is a Talmud Chacham. The din is, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, that people are supposed to do a Talmud Chacham's work for him. So therefore, so if he had somebody do work for him, then really he shouldn't have to pay them. Nevertheless, Shmuel says, I always paid them. I never withheld their wages, even though I would have had every right to exercise my authority as a Talmud Chacham and not pay them for that. So that there is a chiddush in also. But in any case, as far as the shur and the chamur, so again, we're saying that he never had them rent any to him. But again, the question is, maybe it means because he's an oni and therefore he couldn't afford to rent or he didn't have anything that he needed to carry. Ela mehacha. Rather, we can learn that Shmuel was rich from the following pasuk. Pasuk describes how during all the years when Shmuel was the head shofet after Eli had passed away. So the pasuk describes how he would travel around to different cities in Eretz Yisrael to judge the people and teach them Torah and whatever. And the pasuk says it was Shuvosta Haramasa. He would return to Ramah. Kisham Besai, because that's where his house was, Visham Shofar to Yisrael, and that's where he judged the Jewish people, by Yivan Sham Mizbeach Hashem, and he built him Mizbeach Hashem there. Now, the point is, why would the Pasuk need to give all those details? We know he lived in Ramah, because we know from the Pesukim at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel that his parents, Elkanah and Hannah, lived in Ramah. There's no reason to mention Kisham Besai. Also, what's the point? Of course he's returning home. What's the Chiddush in that? And what's the point about Shom Shofat Es Yisrael when the Pasuk is saying that there were other places where he judged the Jewish people? So the Omar Rava, so Rava explains what it means is Komok Mishaholach Beisoy Imoy. Wherever Shmuel went, he had his household with him, meaning, in other words, he was so rich that he could afford to keep a set of furniture and dishes and everything else in every place where he would travel to. Or in Brachas, it actually says a little differently, like he'd take along like an RV or something, to put it in modern terms, and take along everything that he needs for his household furnishings with him from place to place. The point is, he was independently wealthy, and therefore he doesn't need to. And so that's what the pasuk means. When it says Kisham Besai, he would return to Ramah. But when we say Kisham Besai, what we mean is that in every place where he went, there was his house. And then Bisham Shafat is Israel, and in each of these places he judged the Jewish people, and in each of these places by even Sham Mizbeach Lashem. So it doesn't mean specifically in Ramah, it means each of the places that he visited throughout Eretz Yisrael. He would always take along his household with him, and the Gemara mentions in Brachas that what Shmuel wanted to do, he didn't want to have any hana from the people that he's traveling around to, because among other things, he's going to be judging them, and as we learned in Ksubas, a Dayan has to be extra careful not to take any favors from anybody. The Gemara does mention there in Brachas that on the other hand, if a traveling Talmud Chacham does want to have hana, does want to be mahana, the people, Nedah that they can do Achnasas Orchim for him, then fine. We have a precedent from Elisha where we see by the Isha Shunamis that he accepted her and her husband's hospitality, and they even built him a special room, b'chulah. So a Talmud Chacham has a choice in the matter, and Shmuel chose to do it this way, to not be dependent on anybody for anything, but we see, incidentally, from that he was rich enough to be able to afford to do this kind of thing. Marshall also points out, when you get down to it, not necessarily, even though the Pasuk is saying, another point in it actually may be. Maybe he actually didn't have a house in Ramah. When you get down to it, when he was 2 years old, he was brought to the Mishkan, and he lived there for the rest of his life. So why would he need a house in Ramah? If anything, I guess Marshall doesn't specify, but I guess for Pashtus, you could say that one of his other siblings inherited the house after Elkanah passed away. The Pasuk does, first of all, Penina had children with Elkanah, but besides that, even Hannah, the Pasuk says after Shmuel, she ended up having two more boys and two girls. So one of his brothers could have conceivably yashed in the house. Shmuel himself doesn't really need a house in Ramah because he's living in the Mishkan anyhow. Shmuel got married, sure he did. He had children. What? He was a Nazir. The Gemara actually brings him a chloikas at the end of Masech to Nazir. We'll learn it in a few weeks, that's the shame, whether Shmuel was a Nazir in fact. But even if he's a Nazir, so a Nazir can have children. He just can't drink wine, can't become Tommy Mess, and then can't cut his hair. But other than that, he has a normal life. So we see from that Shmuel was rich. And by the way, the Gemara continues, Omer Rava, Godol, Omer B'Shmuel, Mimasha Nema B'Moshe. We see in a way that the way Shmuel describes, the way the Pasuk describes, Shmuel's independence from the Jewish people is even greater than what it says by Moshe. So Moshe is saying, I never took any donkey from them, and we just established that that means he never even needed to rent a donkey from them, because he had his own donkeys, and he had his own arrangements, and he didn't need to bother them for that. When by Shmuel, though, the implication of the pasuk is now. The point is, by Moshe, in other words, the Ran explains, we're saying Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi means I never forced them to lend me, to rent me a donkey and told them, well, I'll pay you for it. So if I was going to rent a donkey from them, it was going to be b'rtzon habayim. It was going to be with their full consent. But Shmuel went even further. He wouldn't even rent, even if the owner consented. Because you never know, after all, maybe the guy is saying, sure, Shmuel, you're asking to rent a junkie from me. I'll lend you one, but maybe I'll rent you one, but maybe he doesn't sincerely mean it. Maybe it's only he's embarrassed. I'm going to tell the shofet of the Jewish people that I don't want to rent him a junkie. So therefore, Shmuel preferred to avoid the whole issue and not even put them on the spot. Dichtiv, as he says, the people answer when Shmuel tells them this. They say, "Vayomru lo yashaktonu, you never withheld any wages from us. V'lo ratzei sonu, and you never ratzei sonu." Now, the simple meaning of ratzei sonu is that it means you never crushed us. Meloshen rotzatz. But Maharsha points out, if that's the case, then it should say ritzatz tonu. So ratzei sonu would darshening meloshen rotzein. So it means you never even took anything from us, even with our full consent. You never took anything from anybody. So in other words, Shmuel himself says, "Esmi ashakti, esmi ratzoisi." And we see though that we see that Shmuel makes this claim. He says, "I never withheld anybody's wages, and I never ratzoisi." And we see actually. So first of all, Marshall says there's two things. First of all, Shmuel is able to make this claim, which Moshe did not. Moshe just said, "I never took a donkey from them," implying, as we said before, it means that if I was going to rent a donkey from them, then I would make sure that I have their permission to do it. But Shmuel is saying, I went even further, and I would never even rent from them in the first place, so they don't feel like they're put on the spot. Second of all, though, Marashah says, we see, nobody agreed with what Moshe says. Moshe said to the Eivishter, Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. We don't find the Jewish people consenting and saying, you know what, he's right, he never took. Whereas by Shmuel, we have all the people gathered together over there, and they all say, Lo yashaktonu v'lo yratzeisonu, v'lo vatachta miyad ishmuel, man, you never took anything from anybody. So in those two ways, really, we see that what it says by Shmuel is greater than what it says by Moshe. Okay, so that covers two of the Nevi'im that we said so far that we see from Pesukim that they were rich. Next, Amos. Where do we see that Amos was rich? Dichtiv. So you have like this. In Amos is one of the Treyos. So in his Sefer, he just describes at one point, he's saying almost all of his Nevuos are harsh Nevuos against the Aseres HaShevatim, that if they don't do Tshuva and shape up, then they're going to be going in Golos. So at one point, the Pasuk says, there was a fellow, Amatzia Koyen Beis El. You had the famous two Egle HaZohav of Yeravam, was standing one in Beis El and one in Don. So you had the priest of the temple there in Basel was a fellow named Amasya. So at one point he tries to master on almost to the king. This is Yerovam II was the king at the time, and Amasya goes and masters to him. Almost is trying to stir up a rebellion over here. He's claiming that you, King Yerovam, are going to be killed. V'chola. The Gemara actually explains in Pesachim that Yerovam did not accept the lashon hara, and for that he has the reward that at the beginning of a couple of neviim from that time he's listed together with a Malcha Yehuda. There's a couple of neviim that are in Shrei also where it says that they said nevuah in the times of Pliny, the kings of Yehuda, and Yerovam. Ben Yoyosh Melech Yisrael. That was his list. In any case, then the pasuk continues that Amasya goes over to Amos himself and says, listen, you know what? I know what's going on over here. You're thinking you're going to say nevuah, and people are going to give you food for it. Like you figure you're going to earn your living as a Navi. So Amasya tells him, you know what, we in Malchus Yisrael, in the kingdom of the Aseres HaShvatim, are not interested in that kind of thing. You want to do that kind of thing, go to Eretz Yehuda. They'll be interested in paying for your nevuahs over there. So Amos replies to him, you don't know what you're talking about. You think I'm doing it because I need to earn a living this way? He tells him, Vayan Amos Vayomer Amatzia, Lo Novi Anoichi, Lo Novi Anoichi. I'm not initially a Novi, and I'm not a son of a Novi. In other words, now he is obviously a Novi. Maharshal explains, in other words, I'm not a Novi of the kind that you think, where I'm doing it only in order to earn a parnasa. Ki boiker anoichi uvoilus shikmim. He says, I'm a boiker and a boilus shikmim. Now, the simple meaning of boiker would be a cowboy, a cowherd, and boilus shikmim would mean somebody who checks on shikmim, which is a type of inferior fig tree, to see whether they're good quality and to take care of their trees or whatever. Now, what does that mean? That wouldn't imply that he's rich. But, umatayogim Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef translates in the Targum on that pasuk. Now, the Targum on that pasuk actually comes from Yonas and Benazil. The whole Nevi'im, Yonas and Benazil translated. But often the Gemara attributes it to Rabbi Yosef because Rabbi Yosef specialized in that Targum. Tosfos in one place explains that the vote may be because Rabbi Yosef was blind, so he couldn't learn Torah Shabbat, so therefore he specialized in Torah Shabbat Peh, which is the Targum. In any case, the Gemara often attributes this Targum to Rabbi Yosef, even though it actually comes from Yonas and Menaziel. So he translates that Amos says to the Samasya, Are more geisi ano, I am an owner of herds. In other words, boiko doesn't mean that I'm the cowboy who takes care of the herds of animals. Fakert, it means that I own lots of herds of animals. V'shikman isli b'shelta, and I have lots of shikma trees in the lowlands of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara elsewhere explains that shikma trees grow best in the lowlands. So we see that, so Amos is saying, I'm independently wealthy. I have cattle, I have shikma trees. So don't think, in other words, that I'm saying nevuah, like you're thinking, just in order to earn a parnasa from it, I'm saying nevuah because the Eibush just sent me. So we see that he was rich. Next, Yonah. Where do we see that Yonah was rich? Dichtiv, you have the say for Yonah. Vayitin, the pasuk describes how Yonah, Hashem tells Yonah, go to Nineveh and tell Ki also Ross and Lafanai, and Yonah wants to run away because he doesn't want any more nevuah about this. The famous medrash that Tovak Voida Ben, like Tovak Voida Ab, he's looking out for the honor of the Jewish people. He knows that if he goes to Nineveh, then they're going to do tshuva, and it's going to reflect really badly on the Jewish people. These goyim do tshuva right away, and the Jewish people are not. So for that, and then various other reasons, he wants to run away. He wants to go to Chutz Laaretz, where he won't get nevuah. And the pasuk describes he goes down to Yaffa. He finds a ship over there. Vayitin schara. He gives the pay for the ship. Vayered ba. He went down into the ship. Lovaimayim Tarshisha to go with them to Tarshish milifnei Hashem, away from where he'll get nevuah from Hashem. Not literally away from Hashem, loychalaretz kvoidei, but away from a place, away from Eretz Yisrael, where he's more prone to get nevuah. In Chutz Laaretz and Tarshish, wherever Tarshish is exactly, he's not going to be getting nevuah. So that's the thing. So Poshet Pshat, we would learn Vayitin Schora means he paid for a ticket, like anybody else would. But V'omer Rabbi Yochanan, Shenosan Schora Shal Sfina Kula, means he paid the fare for the entire ship. And the vote is, in other words, because the whole point is Yonah wants to get out of there as soon as possible. So as soon as he finds a ship that's heading out to Tarshish, then he doesn't want to wait until they find a bunch of more paying passengers. He'll just pay the entire fare. Here, tell me how much you would have gotten as fares for all the passengers on the ship, and I'll pay all of that myself, as long as we can get going. In fact, Maharshal says, you see that from the pasuk. Vayimsa oniya ba'a Tarshish. The pasuk says he found a boat that was good, that ba'a to Tarshish. Now, ba'a implies that it came. Rashi in a few places mentions that ba'a means going to come, and ba'a means it came. So it just came from Tarshish. And he already, why is it setting sail again so soon? Is because Vayitin Schora, he gave them the whole pay that they would have. So therefore, so fine, I want you to get going right away. So therefore, they didn't, so even though they just come from Tarshish, they right away set sail again. And how much are we talking about? For Omer Ramonus, Schora Shol Sfina, Hoya Abbas Alofim Dinrei Zahav. The total amount to pay for the, that they would have paid for passengers on this ship was 4,000 gold dinar. Which, let's try to put this in perspective. A gold dinar, the Gemara mentions in a number of places, equal to 25 silver dinar. Now, dinar is also known as a zuz, and we find from various Gemaras that 200 zuz would be the minimum that a person could live on for a year. So 200 zuz, 200 silver dinar, is equal then to 8 gold dinar. And here we're saying that he's paying 4,000 gold dinar, which is 500 times as much. So it's an enormous amount of money. So we see that Yonah was very rich. So there's four examples of Nevi'im who were very rich, which bears out what we were saying before, that Rabbi Yochanan had said that all the Nevi'im were Ashirim. Okay. Then the Gemara points out, here's another thing about Moshe learning the Torah on Har Sinai. V'omer Rabbi Yochanan, v'tchila hoya Moshe lomed Torah u'mashakcha. Originally, Moshe, throughout the 40 days on Har Sinai, is learning the Torah and kept on forgetting it. Ad shenitn loy matona, until Hashem gave it to him as a present. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Vayitin al Moshe kachalosu the dabu ite b'har Sinai." He gave to Moshe when he had finished speaking with him on Har Sinai. Shnei luchos eidus, the two luchos, suvim be'etzvayelakim, written with the finger of Hashem. Meaning, in other words, Hashem had to be vayitin. He had to give it to him because otherwise Moshe couldn't have understood it on his own. Why not? So the point is because the Torah is seichel of the key. It's a godly seichel. We said before that it wasn't even originally meant to be given to the Jewish people as a whole, at least not the pilpul of it. It was given to Moshe, and he gave it to the Jewish people. So really, Moshe himself is a nivra also, and certainly in 40 days it would be impossible for him to really understand it. So it was Parshat Tokfal of Mishnase, Marshas. It was so difficult for him that he kept on forgetting it. But the Eibishter gave him a matana that he wouldn't forget it. Marshal refers to a medrash on this, lakachta matonis ba'odam, that because the malachim called you odam and said you're not worthy for the Torah, therefore the Eibishter gave it to him as a matona, noisin ba'ayin yofen noisin. There's a lot of different points about what the significance of that is, that Moshe was forgetting it, and then Hashem gave it to him to remember. So Iyun Yaakov brings from the Alshich Kodesh on the Pasuk that says one point is, we learn from this, it's actually a Yerushalmi that says much the same thing, that this way a person in future generations can learn a lesson from that. No matter how much he's learning and he doesn't, very little of it sticks in, he should realize, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu also went through 39 days of forgetting the Torah and not being able to absorb it until the Eibishter gave it to him as a matana. So the same way I keep on at it, and no matter what, whatever of it sticks, sticks, and whatever doesn't, but at least, if nothing else, it's molding his brain. In fact, that's taka an explanation. Why did Moshe, so why didn't the Eibishter, if the Eibishter is going to give it to him as a matana, why not do it to begin with? Why make him go through 39 days of learning it and forgetting it? So the verdict is, because during those 39 days, Moshe is making himself a keli for it. And then on the 40th day, the Eibishter gave him and then poured into that keli. So the same way, a person is learning Torah, even they may not be remembering and retaining very much of it, it's still making their brain into a keli for a Torah, and you never know, eventually some of it may stick. And even if it doesn't, then
so the problem was not that he didn't understand. The problem was he forgot.
Right, but that's the point. You could have a person who's learning it, and immediately he forgets it. He's like you have in Pirkei Avos over there, the mashpich, it goes in one ear and out the other. Nevertheless, as it's going through from one ear to the other, nevertheless, it's still making a difference in his brain. It's still making his brain into a keli for Torah, and eventually some of it may stick. That's what we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu's experience over here. Some Akhtarit didn't want it as a matana, fine, but that's, in other words, because there you're talking about that he already was able to learn Torah, that Al-Tadeva was offering him matana to learn it on a higher level. Here it's Poshet Moshe wasn't able to absorb it at all. So that's different, so to receive that as a matana, then the fact that... that's what we're saying, even Chochma Datsilus is still a Nivra after all, yeah.
Later
he regretted it, that's also true, and Hanami, yeah, that's true too, yeah. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Yud Ches Shvat, The Rebbe talked about that it's very clear that our generation is the last generation of Golos and the first generation of Gola. We know the Friedrich Rebbe was already announcing, almost as soon as he came to America, he started announcing La'al to L'Truva, La'al to L'Gola in Tufshin Aleph and Tufshin Beis, and was announcing Imdu Hoch and Koch, and everybody needs to stand and be ready for Mashiach Tzidkenu. So how much more so now than decades later, then all the more so it must definitely be the time for the Gola. And Mosse, yeah. It's mentioned at the time. I've seen, by the way, in that connection, at that time when that campaign came out, not all Rabbonim and Gedolei Yisrael were on board with this idea. Some of them said that it's gonna weaken people's emunah if it doesn't happen, Chas v'Shalom, whatever. Anyway, there was the Zvila Rebbe of that time said something like, he said the secret of Mashiach has been going over to the Lubavitcher. So they have reshus to talk about it publicly. Okay. Moving along, we're talking about dinim of chol shiyesh bei sakana, that you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos for them. So now, let's say, for example, you have a person that's chol shiyesh bei sakana, and the only meat that's available is meat that's treif. So then, the problem is, if you give him that, when he finds out that he was given treif meat, then that may make his condition even worse, knowing that he was given. So therefore, instead, you prepare him kosher meat, even if it involves chilul Shabbos. But if there's no concern about that, let's say he's a cotton, or let's say he's crazy, then you give him the boster osir rather than shechting for him on Shabbos, because you still do want to, where possible, minimize the chilul Shabbos. And related din to that, also, if it happens, you have to cook on Shabbos for a sick person, so a healthy person is not allowed to eat from that food on Shabbos, because we're concerned Shema Yarveh, etc., but Motzei Shabbos, then a healthy person would be allowed to eat it right away. Unlike if a person cooked it on Shabbos where it's osur, then you have the person himself who cooked it is never allowed to eat it, and anybody else has to wait b'chadei she osur, but here where there was a heter to cook it on Shabbos, and the only concern is Shema Yarveh, then anybody can eat from it right away Motzei Shabbos. Then we have a din. Now, we've been talking about all this time about a chol shiyesh bei sakana. What about you have a person where they're trying to force him to be over an aveira? So no matter how serious an aveira it is, you can't be mechal Shabbos to save him from that. The Alter Rebbe actually adds that's when you're talking about doing an Issur Shel Torah to save him, an Issur D'Rabbanan, then where they're trying to force him to violate a Lois HaSeh Shel Torah, then that would be valid. And that would include, now on the other hand, for example, if they're trying to force him to Shmadzich, Rachman al-Litzlan, then even a Kotten or Ketana, then anybody has to get involved and save him, even if that means being Mechal Shabbos, even if it means driving in a car or whatever it takes for that kind of thing, because it's the same as Chol HaShiyesh Bei Sakana. The whole point is you save a Chol HaShiyesh Bei Sakana on Shabbos, Kedei Sheyishmer Shabbos HaHarbe, and then even if it's a suffix, so all the more so over here where it might Rachman al-Litzlan, the kid or whoever, might never observe a Shabbos again. On the other hand, you have what if the person is going and doing it deliberately, then you can't be Mechal Shabbos there with an Issur D'Oraisa, because then you have the concept, you don't say Chater B'Shvil Sheyizka Chavercha. Your fellow Yid deliberately went and did something wrong, we don't say that you should go and do an Issur for him to be Zoicha. However, if it's only an Issur D'Rabbanan, then Yesh Matirin to do that, although the Alter Rebbe seems to imply that even that might be also where he went and did it willingly. Whether that applies nowadays, where I don't know how much you can say people are willing when you have the whole concept of Tinik Shanishba, that's a whole different question. I don't know. Okay.